Love is one of the few words that has been widely used, misused and abused in the world. From love towards the divine to love of the carnality is a broad spectrum that appears before us. When we hear this word, and many a time I have a loathsome feeling where such a sound touches my ears. I am no hater of genuine concern, sympathy, empathy, service, sacrifice, compassion. I pray for those beautiful and divine qualities to express through this medium of his existence more and more as the days advance, and seek for the divine embrace when love will find its summit expression in my total annihilation. I would rather pray, like the seer of the Shvetavastara Upanishad, may the Lord of Love, who projects himself into this universe of myriad forms, from whom all beings come and to whom all return, grant us the grace of wisdom. He is fire and the sun and the moon and the stars. He is in the air and the sea and the creator, Prajapati. He is the God. He is that girl, he is this man, he is that woman, he is this old man too, tottering on his staff. His face is everywhere. From dust I came, I know, and to dust I return is what I eagerly await. When I say this, it is neither despair nor rejection. It is love for him which alone matters to me. What is not very fair is the advantage that is sought to be derived by an appeal to such an emotion as love and seeking services of others as a matter of right. It is that greed that I do not understand. We tend to love, not serve, but for our sake most of the time, and rarely, if at all, master is love worthy and is more right in the lives of many. Real love is a relationship that can exist between persons of two or more. True it is that some persons love themselves so much that they are called narcissists. But truly everyone loves himself more than others. It is a fact of conscience. In such cases, the personality is already split and is not integral to this true being. The first signs of viveka lie in understanding this nature of loving ourselves and finding it loathsome, start learning to love others. This is the true and real awakening to the reality that must precede all other awakenings. The narcissistic love has very strong foundation in the expression of all forms of life. I am referring to the preservation instinct, as you might have already understood. But what is life? It is simply a matter of integrated expression of several functions and organs of the being in the organic world. A bit of understanding of the modern day science would reveal to us that the difference between the organic and inorganic world is more a matter of practical convenience, and we know everything is an expression of the interplay of energy particles. Loving self, therefore, is at the superficial level only, but even then is a matter of loving the particular pattern of expression of several particles, as we shall see later. This basic understanding of interdependency of life and its forms, and for that matter all that exists, is the first awakening we should have in order to love. So love then would mean concern for togetherness of being. Love for one changes and matures into love for two. The second object of love then, for a human expression, is the mother. Thus the concept of Matrudeva Bhava, know the mother as God, is born. This love matures into the concept of Pitrudeva Bhava, know the father of God. The love for these two persons increases by the day with the simple awareness that they are essentially also concerned about his being. Master states this when he wrote, it's the nature of children that sometimes they feel more attached to the mother and sometimes to their father. Love, the basis of all, is there. I love myself, my parents love me, and therefore I love my parents. Interrelationship thus improves into interdependency, another crucial and essential factor in the development of the vehicle. Love then matures into loving everything and person related and connected in such a way as to promote harmony in the relationships that was conceived. Love that is thus generated is the wisdom that awakens the inner reality in us. The reality of the inseparable and integral unity of our being is the inner awakening that arises during meditation and experience. However, love, or what Master would prefer to call motherly affection, is for the first time seen as advancement in spiritual life. Master says that is a sign of aggregation of love. Now he has started learning love from the very base, which moves on all other sides. Love then brings forth to our mind another of its great qualities, namely a sense of reward for maintaining such a relationship. Essentially then, the love we develop is with an anticipation of reward, mutual though it might be. One such relationship is what we develop when we say we love the Master. Love and attachment to Master has its own rewards. Surely love to Master accomplishes the great task of removal of certain spiritual diseases, the most important of which are 1. Envy, 2. Jealousy, 3. Happiness, unhappiness, and 4. Evil towards others. Spiritual tradition sought to overcome them by development of Maitri, or universal fraternity, through the development of kindness to all creatures and things in the universe, the practice of forbearance and developing an attitude that everything that happens is a gift from the Divine, and accepting the same with gratitude, and 4. The development of the happy state of contentment under all circumstances. By loving Master, we accomplish them with the help of Pranabhuti and our own efforts to some extent too. By loving Him who loves all, we remove the brokenness in the thread of love that weaves our destiny as worthy and lovable children of God. We then feel love flowing equally to one and all, and it becomes universal. Master says, in that case, father, mother, husband, wife, and everybody will have the same share. I draw your special notice to the words, same share. This is why Master adds, love is not bad, but its proper utilization we do not know. In our sadhana, we naturally tend to love Master for getting rid of our miseries and afflictions. But the reward we anticipate for such love can only be love in return. But we seek relief from the enjoyment of suffering or miseries which are consequent to our past actions. Master has many a time stated that he believes and experiences that none of the mortals is free from miseries. He makes it clear that the miseries of our most faithful companions who never desert us in hour of need. But it is really we who make miseries miserable by the action of our thoughts and will. Joy and sorrow are the two ends of a thing, or two poles of a magnet. As in the case of magnet, magnet poles, unlike, attract each other. So do joys attract sorrow, and vice versa. Why then is the cause case? When this is the case, how can it be possible to ignore either? The only solution in my view is to divert our attention from them. Stop giving them strength by the action of our thought and will, and let them wither away like the unwatered plants. This can be easily achieved if we dedicate everything to Master and design to His will. Our job is to remain firm and sincere to our duty and to deserve rest with God, to feel resentment for what He gives or what He does not give, is against the principle of due love and devotion. This is a quotation to Master. How difficult to understand and to live by the principle of true love is all sadhana about. We seek love of others related and unrelated to us, and we tend to seek the help of the Master here also. Master, in His infinite grace, has recommended to us the method of loving others through the prayer suggested to be offered at 9 p.m. So when we pray that all our brothers and sisters are developing true love and devotion, we have to keep in mind the above thoughts and pray that everyone is really developing their will to accept everything in life as God given. Kindly note, this is the stress. Pray that everyone is really developing their will to accept everything in life, that is, real love and devotion, as God given. But many of us, when we pray, love and devotion is developing in the hearts and minds of the aspirants, are very vague in our conception of the work we are doing, and perhaps even think that all are developing an emotional bondage with the Divine. The prayer that we offer, that all our brothers and sisters are developing true love and devotion towards the Master, is the most important aspect of our sadhana from my point of view. That some persons do not see its real significance is mainly to the fact they are not feeling themselves responsible for the universal good. I've been stressing the fact that it is only the evolved persons who can pray like that for the sake of others. That is one of the prime indices of progress in the path of spirituality. In 1957, Master, in his letter to E.N.O., which invited his companion, laid down the method as follows. Let us all, brothers and sisters, sit at a fixed hour, individually, at our respective places, and meditate for about an hour, thinking that all the people of the world are growing in peace, loving and pious. Master added that this process suggested not with exclusively spiritual motives is highly efficacious in bringing about the desired result and weaving the destiny of the miserable millions. A bit of digression, you have heard just now Dr. Yagi giving the experiment where they are talking about a 5 minute meditation followed by another 5 minutes instruction, what will be the fifth time. And Babaji is asking for 1 hour effort. It's the first difference in this. That 1 hour, finally, even in the mission actually, when finally he lied down, he made it in 15 minutes. And some people thought that itself is too much. And people don't practice. This only shows our obsession to our self, what we call a self in English. And refusal to understand universal good as the most important. The experiment that has been conducted there for Sarapati and others to follow in the opinion as to how best we can change it or transform. Some of you can write to them also. And in this context, I must tell you, Dr. Shastri contacted these people on a different occasion and said, that ours is a period of half an hour sitting that we have got to do. They said 5 minutes, we said a half an hour, so we have this problem. The experimental time, but whatever may be the constraints of the instruments, I do not know, whatever may be the constraints, we cannot compromise on that half an hour, because we know as people who have been practicing meditation, it takes time. Otherwise, we should resort to two. The experiment that Babaji, that Yagi has quoted, namely visualization. You have got to visualize the whole thing. The experiment differs from our method in the sense that we are asked to visualize certain things. And the effect of it is there. But the main point to note there is the thought works across. I always consider that if we are to grow in the realms of the divine, we owe it to him and his creation to work for his beauty and grandeur. The whole difficulty arises only when we start doubting whether our thoughts and feelings affect others. Undoubtedly, any aspirant properly introduced into the system has a connection with the Brahma and even higher levels of consciousness. However, since our growth in the universal consciousness of Brahma is partial and most of the time peripheral, we do not feel that we are really connected and feel that we are separate individuals. In order to answer this point, only Master has dilated on this subject in his Commandment 6 and clarified our commonness to the source. Still many, for want of inner awakening to the Master and having this awareness only in the tongue and words, question whether there is really a universal energy that ties and all existence together. In recent times, many an experiment is being conducted by researchers in the field of parapsychology and telepathy in particular to prove the veracity of the claims that thought can and does affect others. That's what we have seen. An interesting feature of the recent development is the concept of the web of love. It has been suggested by some researchers that the collective vibration of humans is now high enough to sustain this form of communication on a worldwide scale. Can you note this form of communication that they are talking about? The focused intent to transmit love and healing energy, it is being accepted more and more as possible and is being accomplished. The healing energy Yagi was referring as something that he could not understand. Had he gone through the volumes of Prabhupada Maharaj, would have seen many times that the healing energy was there. And then the curative powers of the Master are invoked to do certain things. There are certain techniques which we do not follow here. And if you read carefully the cleaning procedure we have given for the worship of bliss, it also talks about removing all the dirt and disease, include disease. Not only spiritual. All events originate in thought. If we study the world's metaphysical and spiritual teachings, whether they are from East or West, we see that one of the basic spiritual tenets or natural laws is that all events originate in thought. We know, as we so do we read. Putting this same in another way, we may say, thoughts are cause, outer events are effects. In other words, it is not possible for an event to take place in the outer world without there first being a thought. Thought is the positive factor. It may sound difficult to understand, but the truth is that we are the makers of war and disarmament. So events such as war, violence and disarmament, whether it is on a personal or a collective level, have their origin in thoughts of separation and apartness. We can call it the first and then thought. Thoughts like this, thoughts that we are separate individuals with no connection to each other, are not in harmony with the nature of reality. That every person and everything are in fact one. This is one of the most basic Vedic statements that is eternally true. When people have thoughts of separation, these thoughts lead to fear and hate, which eventually manifests in the outer world as conflict, violence and war. If we take as our starting point that we all in reality are one, that we are all connected, then we must come to the conclusion that these negative thoughts cannot only be present in the terrorists and warmongers. They must in fact also be present in all the people who are affected and influenced by them in the outer world. We must come to this conclusion if we accept the premise that we are all one and that our thoughts are creating our reality. Thus we see that all of us are with our daily thoughts and words contributing to the collective consciousness and to the collective reality on planet Earth. When I say this, of course, I do not mean only the people who are involved directly in wars or terrorist acts, but all those who are responsible, the victims and their close relations, and all the many millions of people all over the world who right now feel deeply affected by this event, have consciously harbored thoughts of separation, fear and disaster. Usually we are not aware of the fact that many of our most basic thoughts about the nature of life are thoughts of separation, fear and limitation. It is in this context I have been pleading for a more responsible and holistic understanding of the Commandment 7 of our dear Master. We can determine our destiny if we can see the cause of these events in our thoughts. We can also see the solution, the cure for this problem is also in our thoughts. If we want to experience a better world in the outer world, we first have to think about, observe, see and believe in a better world in the inner core of our being. We have to remember and realize our interconnectedness, our unity. Here again we must remember our premise, thoughts are thoughts, outer events are effects. As long as our thoughts are of separation, limitation or fear, we will keep on experiencing an outer world of disharmony, poverty, death and destruction. If we want to experience a world of peace, harmony, oneness, love, prosperity and happiness, we have to change our focus and see and envision such a world. That is why it has been stressed by the Master that individual realization has to precede universal peace. Also, it has been the path of saints to always love others, even if they intend harm to them. Master in his own style said, if you are in the habit of breeding thoughts, breed good thoughts. We have to focus on the fact that in reality there is only oneness, one God, one power, who is the God of all human beings, whether this he, she or it is called the Spirit, the Goddess, Jehovah, Allah, Brahman or the Force. We have to focus on the fact that in reality there is only one human being, one soul, individualized in all 6 billion plus human beings on earth, whether this human being is a man or woman, white or black, Christian, Hindu or Muslim, American or Arab. And we have to see this one power of force working in and through all human beings on earth in perfect harmony and love. The task of loving that one God or power is made easier when we find a guide who is nurturing him and is available to us to develop love and devotion towards him. According to our Master, by connecting ourselves with such a person, with love and devotion, and by practicing meditation in the right manner, we get transcended accordingly. This linking with the Master ensures that the divine current readily running through every fiber of our being, kindling the feeling of true love and devotion in the heart. That is what Master said when he said, love him to love God. It may appear that changing our thoughts and focusing on oneness and love is of little use if the thoughts of most other people are focused on separation and fear. But remember this, on the physical plane it might seem as if we are all separate individuals, but on the inner invisible consciousness plane we are all one. In reality there is only one mind of God, we are all one and constantly using. What one human being thinks sends invisible waves out into the world and affects the entire collective consciousness. Scientific research indicates that if 1% of Earth's population changes or raises its consciousness, it will create a critical mass that will lift the entire collective consciousness. Kindly note this, 1% if they can change, the entire world changes. One may question the assumption above, but also feel that this cannot be proved. But clear and close observation of events help us a lot in our understanding of the unity of consciousness. Some years ago, some scientists observed a very interesting phenomenon involved in several small Japanese islands. The only inhabitants of these islands were monkeys, and the diet of these monkeys consisted of, among other things, sweet potatoes, which the monkeys dug out of the ground and ate. The scientists discovered that one of the monkeys on one of the islands had learned how to clean and scrub the potatoes before he ate them. It was not long before more and more monkeys on that island also learned how to clean and scrub their potatoes before they ate them. But what was really interesting was that a short while after about 100 monkeys of the first island learned how to do this, the monkeys on all the neighboring islands also started cleaning and scrubbing their potatoes before eating them, without having the physical contact with the monkeys on the first island. It is now explained by psychologists by saying that consciousness is a non-local phenomenon in space and time, and because on this inner plane of consciousness we are all interconnected. This means that when one individual raises and changes his or her consciousness, the entire collective consciousness is raised and changed too, that any form of physical too, without any form of physical contact. This explains why the monkeys on the other island suddenly learn how to wash and scrub their potatoes without any contact with other monkeys. Because when the 100 monkeys on the first island engaged, changed and expanded their consciousness, it had an immediate effect on the entire collective monkey consciousness without any physical contact with the monkeys. It should be obvious that the same holds true for us human beings. In other words, when one individual changes and raises his or her consciousness, it affects the rest of the collective consciousness without any form of physical contact. This means that you and I, whoever we are and wherever we are, by changing our consciousness and focusing on unity, oneness and love, can contribute to creating a critical mass that will lift the entire collective consciousness of mankind and thus create peace and harmony on earth. This I need not stress is what Master was asking us all to do. That is our call to humanity to live in sin after our consciousness. But the difficulty is, when all creation is one, is agreed in argument, in actual practice this does not find a place. It was the great philosopher Hegel who said, history is the process of spirit becoming flesh. This is a great wisdom he shared with us. Scientists always talk about their highly questionable and yet in their opinion infallible theory of a random universe. For want of any other better theory, we all necessarily agree that everything here is a child of the Big Bang. To put it qualitatively, we are cousins to Noah, the stars, the mountains and the rivers. We are cousins to the tigers that try to annihilate us, and lorry truck that is ready to run over us. Neo-Darwinians say that evolution is based on random changes, on random mutations. If really ours is a random universe that just throws out mutations in totally random methods, there should be more than a few hundred different life forms, but we find only one, the DNA. This is something that should be used to reason. The Big Bang started, for whatever reason, let us say, at random, and has worked out over a period of 3.8 billion years, our planet. In this planet around us, whether alive or not, our cousins are every stone and creature, every mountain is melting lava or molten lava. Let us for a moment think about the time when the Big Bang occurred. Obviously, it required some energy. According to dictionaries, energy is the ability to work, and that means the ability to move something. What is that something that was moved then when nothing was there? It will be a matter of gratification for Abhyasis to know that our master has tried to explain this as latent motion, which is there along with the center of God. However, I do not intend to dilate on this subject. for the person. It is not available in your text. Accepting that something we may call energy was there, it was obviously, it obviously lived in what is called a Planck time. When a little bit of energy emerges from an atom, I understand that it does not emerge in just any form or size whatsoever, but it comes in a standard size similar to a mechanized brick stone made out of mud. The entire universe is made out of these Planck units. Much later we are told the quarks got evolved and they are only in 6 in different forms since their emergence millions of years ago. This we are told happened all at random. Difficult to understand for mortal rationality, for sure. We find thus super sameness and super simultaneity, the words you may kindly recall are there even in efficacy. Super sameness and super simultaneity, and the reason for such an emergence is thought to be answered as random occurrence. Further, I find it very interesting to note that none of these emergences were individual units. They were always in multiple and similar units. There's a beehive I see as a dreamer. It is in this context we need to appreciate the concepts of potentiality and latent motion which Master uses in his classical work of Efficacy of Raja. I am informed that all life rules are contained in addition, subtraction, multiplication and division from the beginning of the time. Just from the beginning, there are the positive and negative forces, and their interplay is what all manifestation is about. We may see the clarity that we gain when we understand the theory of parallelism and also the concepts of center and shore, not available in the text. I also understand from this the relationship between things is a fundamental truth, and it is not difficult to see the basis of daivi prakriti and avasari prakriti in this. These rules dramatically present the case as to which quarks are going to be allowed to associate with which quark, with what quarks, and which quarks are going to say no to which one. They gang up in groups of 3. If 2 up quarks merge with 1 down quark, then it is called a proton. And if it is the other way around, 2 down quarks and 1 up, it is a neutron. All these protons and neutrons are getting together with those little things flicking around called electrons, and the whole thing is a high-speed drama called the plasma. These things somehow organize, and we are all informed randomly at that to bring out this coherent universe. The first matter of any substance, matter made up of more than one atom getting together, I understand, did not appear until over 300,000 years after the Big Bang. These are all surprises, and surely they are random according to scientists of the present day. But for me, those galaxies, star collapses, and new forms of atoms, planets and atmosphere have occurred according to some basic rule and not according to any random method. The mere fact we are able to understand them means that there is some law which I think our ancients called wisdom. Since the Big Bang, I understand it is 14 billion years, and thus I know I have a history that long and tedious, and I understand that I am a lump of quarks and also that you are one such. This, of course, is my simplistic understanding of physics and a bit of mathematics. But what is intriguing to me is that the great sage Kanada, who found the way to realization through his theory of atoms, said all this through other methods than scientific instruments and modern gadgets. It is, of course, a pity his system was totally lost, and the philosophies of Rahul, Advaita Vedanta, and Sabalma, Puru Mimamsa. These are the two basic swallowing, they have swallowed everything. Y Advaita Vedanta is the Rahu. And the governor is Madhiketu, he is the Puranyas, the Rituals and the Vera, the Sastris and Karmas. That's all of them, the whole thing. Everything is lost. The truths of other systems. It is my inner belief that the culture of self-brahmanics and visrobrahmanics, I hope you understand these two words, self-brahmanics and visrobrahmanics, really ruin the wisdom that is integral. And one such casuality is the philosophy of Panada in the spiritual history of our country. Scientists have noted that the sudden emergences after the celebrated Big Bang were never a single occurrence and are always in multiples, similar and simultaneous. This being together is what is basic to all that exists, is a point worth noting. But it is also Rupa Jnana that we are talking about. That is what I have been repeatedly telling, independence is a myth, interdependence is a reality. We are never alone, and we are always dependent and cooperative all the time. This is the basic fact that we tend to ignore when we talk of individual concerns and interests. There is, and there can be, only collective consciousness. Individuality is a great illusion, nurtured, pampered, and harnessed by the various civilizations and cultures. Philosophies which talked of independent realization are really contraptions of reality. We are integrally and inseparably united is the real truth. God is the ultimate energy. He is as much dependent upon us as we the creatures who are essentially the expressions of the same energy are dependent on it. From cosmic dust we come, and to it we return is the basic truth. So far of the so many quarks which found expression, it is only we the human beings who have consciousness and have the ability to understand this fundamental truth. Whether this consciousness will improve on itself by understanding its mutual dependence or annihilate itself is the issue before the human conscience. It is in that light that we should see the call of the Master for loving the entire fraternity of human beings and all other existence in the prayer that he has suggested for universal good. Master also asserted that we are united in the common cause, keeping to the proper order the good of man and humanity. For those of you who would like to see the Ten Commandments, kindly see, this is the secret of nature that I am revealing. He doesn't talk more about it. And everybody talks about fraternity, don't think I am also talking about the same fraternity. And I have got my own way that it is not the Rotary Club or the Mother Brothers. This is the secret. We should know that we are inseparable with the Divine. Putting it in traditional way, so many ways are there. Master's suggestion of prayer at a fixed hour, 9 p.m. prayer as we call it, we should lift our own consciousness and the whole collective consciousness. The concept of the Master we should have is that he is the one who is the force that loves all. Our mind should dwell on this first, and we should have a firm grasp of the condition in our mind. The purpose of the prayer is that all the inhabitants of this planet love the great Master. This vision that we should develop implies that everyone is developing love and devotion to each other. This grand vision should be clearly maintained during the period of meditation suggested at that time. A new vision of unity, peace and love on earth should emerge in our mind. The vision which encompasses all people, all races, all nations and all religions are all united in the Master and all are one with the Master. That is the Viswarupa that we should have of our Master. It's a song of harmony and bliss that emerges before our eyes. The vision of the ocean of bliss is real before our eyes, and we are all merging in it, losing our separateness and identity in total. That is the blissful blessing of the duty. That is the true love and devotion advised by the Master in Commandment 9 that we should seek and possess. That is the only one law of life and love. that it is only one wonderful gulf of wisdom of all saints of the world and advents and avatars that is equally possible for us, and we thus become masters in our own right. The peace such a prayer grants cannot be compared with any other peace, any other, and this is the one perfect and profound peace. Our planet and our mother land and the Gaia will all reveal as such a marvel that we accomplished, and verily the heaven on earth is there. One more practical point that needs to be remembered: all our actions and dealings during the day should necessarily be based on this assumption. Such an exercise makes it possible to not only comply with all the commandments of the Master, but in fact helps us to one of the conditions that we gain during meditation and in fact that is easy. We are all living in a world where we are constantly shown by the media man's inhumanity towards each other through violence, terrorism and war. Never has there been a time when the glow of the Master enshrined in our hearts as divine light is more needed than now. During this powerful time in history, we, as group of conscious and conscientious beings, actively can shift the awareness of the planet. The spiritual work that, under the guidance of our Master, that we are doing, has prepared us perfectly for this precise moment. Our voices, actions and intentions will inspire and heal so many. No longer can we sit by and just watch helplessly our governments and such authorities making conscious yet paradoxically unconscionable choices. We must combine our spiritual practice with uplifting words and positive action. If we can do this, I believe with my whole being that we are on the brink of something truly amazing. The vision I hold is that we are a moment away from creating a world safe for our children, their children and all generations to follow. Some of you may think how we can as individuals change such what is happening in our governments and our world. The answer is, it is simply by living as a conscious and committed disciple of Sri Ramachandra and thereby becoming a spiritual activist, and by being that spark, to help others raise their awareness and find peace. By committing to creating peace within us and our family and encouraging others to stay steadfastly by all human beings who value humanity, and by helping others discover their light, we set in motion the intention of positive transformation. If one by one each of us take a personal responsibility for raising the awareness of humanity, we begin to shift the global consciousness towards more and more benevolence and love. There's a powerful phenomenon in group behavior called reaching a critical mass, about which I referred earlier in this article. What this means is that one person begins initiating a behavior, others observe it and begin imitating the action. Then one by one all others join until enough people are behaving in the same way, and the entire crowd follows this in the critical mass. Earlier I cited the monkey behavior. Now let us turn to a human example. This is what we observe in our cricket stadiums. When someone starts supporting, say, Tendulkar, shouts six, Tendulkar six, and the shout is getting carried through the crowd in no time, and the entire stadium reverberates with that slogan and appeal for that first person started. The paradox is that person who initiated the process of shouting cannot stop it once it has gained the critical mass. It is a very important feature of human behavior that we should use to the best of our advantage in the spread of the message of the Master, and that is the reason he stresses the need to offer prayer at 9 PM mark by all who are united with him. The healing light of the Master within each of us is very badly needed by our world at this juncture, when violence and all that is based in us are dancing in frenzy. It can be ignited by each one of us at any moment. In the same way, the spectator in the Krishna stadium starts to chant the glory of a player or team of his liking. Realization is always a matter of a split second affair, and who knows, it happens in millions because of our prayers. We can all take courage and strength from the immortal words of Mahatma Gandhi: "Be that change you wish to see in the world." We never know whether we might just be the spark that changes our collective consciousness to peace and integrity. I would like to state a few more obvious facts with an intention that we all follow the call of the Master to love Him who loves all. We are aware that we live in unprecedented times. Never before has the entire human family been entrusted with the task of working together to imagine and then consciously build a sustainable, just and compassionate future. New approaches to leadership are being called for to meet the unique demands and opportunities of the moment of history. The new generation of adults through the world can be classified as upshifters, who are born even further and are pioneering a new way of life that is more sustainable, satisfying and soulful. They are making a whole pattern shift in their lives that grows out of an ecological awareness and the sense that they are here as more than just consumers to be entertained. They strongly feel that they are soulful beings who want to grow. Let us ask ourselves, what does awakening look like as it moves into the world from our meditation rooms? Our entire future may depend on how we answer this question, on how effectively we are able to bring a spiritual perspective to bear on the urgent global challenges faced by our awakening at this decisive juncture in our evolutionary journey. It means that we need to develop simplicity in the memory of that infinite void which we confront in our periods of contemplation and meditation. Master's call to be plain and simple reverberates in our mind. However, we understand that we live voluntary simplicity, that to live voluntary simplicity means choosing our path, however, through life consciousness. It is not so much about living with less as it is living with purpose and balance. Simplicity lies at the intersection of spirituality and sustainability. If we note carefully, we find that a quiet revolution in our living has been underway for the past few decades, in which considerable number of persons who owe their strength and confidence to the Master, as also others who are indirectly influenced by the ever-flowing grace of the great Master, have made significant changes towards simpler ways of living. This shows the shift towards more sustainable and compassionate ways of living. Simplicity is not about a life of poverty and sacrifice, but about a life of purpose and satisfaction. This is important because a sustainable future for the earth will require much more than a surface change to a different style of life. It requires a deep change to the new way of life. That is what we find in the call of our Master for maintaining moderation in all our dealings. He writes, "We are all family people, but we must be moderate in all our dealings, and money is also essential for us everywhere. So it becomes our duty to have it for our maintenance and good living." We have also noted that social systems, which include monasteries, churches, mutts and ashrams, and host of other secular and non-secular institutions, tend to decline in performance as they become bigger, more complex and increasingly incomprehensible. They also become less amenable to democratic control and more vulnerable to disruption at key points. There is evidence that we may be pressing against the limits of our ability to manage large bureaucracies in their current configurations. Spiritual persons always prefer small to big and live a philosophy of enough is enough. This applies to individuals and can easily be applied to institutions. But for that, a great spiritual quality is the base, contentment. Enough is enough. It's a great sentence of Swami Vivekananda that has to be remembered always. To love is to share, and sharing means a certain amount of sacrifice. As the importance of the individual was just sharing and not sharing has become the source of happiness. Savings and insurance, the twin concepts of the modern world, which safely make us forget any providence or God who protects us, or their very existence redundant, have simultaneously made us forget what it is to love. Love and compassion are divine potentialities lying in the core of our heart, of the being, of human beings, and it would be for bordering on suicide and stupidity to ignore the right, our right to be divine. A study was made recently regarding the creative role of philanthropy in responding to our rapidly changing world. I am not able to get a copy of the report, but that does not matter. The core question was whether it was possible to identify transformational initiatives that recognize the world system is moving through a time of profound change, creating a unique window of opportunity for seeding initiatives that support the turn towards a more sustainable, just and compassionate future. Do we have the means and the art well prepared to make the sacrifices to look into the problems of war and strife, conflict and exploitation? We seem to be desperately seeking an answer to this. The problem has to be attended to, because the impact of humanity is now global. That is the scale at which we are challenged to become reflective. If we are to make a choice about our common future, post-Hiroshima analysis of the disastrous actions does serve no purpose than a study of history of nations. At the present, the vehicle of collective attention at a civilizational scale is the mass media, particularly the broadcast television. If civilizations are to realize the potential for reflective consciousness and become self-guiding in their evolution, then it is vital for the public to mobilize the public's awareness on behalf of public interest. Whatever we start with, we find that every forbidden topic imaginable has been covered on the television. The television is profoundly biased towards the high consumption rates of life that the earth cannot sustain. Sanity has to have its say on this topic, and a boycott of the government side on the television may not be out of place if the media is not robbed and raped by the consumer market. Although human societies have confronted major battles throughout history, the challenges of our era are unique. Never before has the entire human family has been required to work together to imagine and consciously build a sustainable future. This is the need of the day, and the solution of the master to this problem is what we have in the prayer he has suggested for all of us. We can make this world better than what it is. We have the love. We have the love for master as our anchor. The confidence in the infallibility of the master is there to keep us on our march towards the global peace. It is this love for the master I consider as a full and perfect awakening reality. Thank you for your patient hearing.